Welcome, great patriotic friends, to October 26th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. It is I, your host, Joseph DeCristoforo, and one of the reasons why I do the show is because I'm on a mission from Uncle Sam to make history as fun and exciting as one could possibly make a history podcast. And believe me, some days are easier than others. I assembled the show from a tool shed in my backyard in La Mesa, California, right next to America's finest city, San Diego. By the way, if you're looking to move to the area, or if you have any questions about real estate, check out TeresaLovesRealEstate.com, because as a full-service Encinitas and San Diego real estate professional, Teresa works with buyers, sellers, and investors in real estate transactions. So yeah, check it out, TeresaLovesRealEstate.com. And now, let's begin the show as we customarily do with the Pledge of Allegiance. Let's everybody stand up, face the flags, put our right hands over our hearts, and begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Amen, brothers and sisters. And now on to today's headlines. The Cuban Missile Crisis Part 5, Stalemate. Plus, Queen Califia's magical circle becomes a historical landmark. And we'll talk about the shootout at the OK Corral. All right, so now let's do this. 1962, the Cuban Missile Crisis Part 5, Stalemate. Photographic evidence indicated that Soviets were ramping up the building of nuclear missiles in Cuba. President Kennedy ordered a naval blockade to block Soviet ships from entering Cuba, but the Soviets were ordered to ignore the quarantine. Kennedy became convinced that an invasion of Cuba was the only way to have the missiles removed. Fidel Castro sent a message to Nikita Khrushchev asking for missiles to be fired should U.S. invade Cuba. ABC News correspondent John Scaly reported to Washington that he met with a Soviet agent who suggested that Moscow was willing to handle this diplomatically. If the Soviets removed the missiles from Cuba, the U.S. wouldn't invade the island. That's the deal. The U.S. told Brazil to tell Castro if the missiles were removed, the U.S. would be unlikely to invade. Meanwhile, Khrushchev wrote a long rambling letter to JFK that Bobby Kennedy called very long and emotional. It said, in short, the same thing Scaly reported. The Soviets will remove the missiles if the U.S. lifts the quarantine and pledges not to invade Cuba. The next day, Saturday, October 27th, day 12, Khrushchev sent a tougher letter to Washington with the same terms, but also a new one to remove U.S. obsolete Jupiter missiles from Turkey. Keyword there being obsolete. But then, a Soviet-supplied SA-2 guideline SAM, or surface-to-missile, shot down and killed USAF Major Rudolf Anderson in his U-2 recon jet from the sky. President Kennedy awarded him the Distinguished Service Medal posthumously to Major Anderson's widow. Kennedy and his advisors in XCOM prepared for a Cuban invasion within days if a diplomatic solution wouldn't be reached. Kennedy argued that the Turkey missile removal would have to be part of a largely negotiated settlement. Turkey hated this deal, by the way, but oh well. Kennedy and XCOM decided to ignore the Saturday letter and responded instead to the more appeasing Friday letter. That was a risky move, and it put Khrushchev in a bad position. And all active duty military personnel were recalled to their bases. Later that night, Bobby Kennedy met secretly with Ambassador Anatoly Dobrynin. Bobby told Dobrynin the U.S. was going to get rid of those missiles in Turkey anyway. Deal done. Just keep that last part a secret. So, to be clear, Soviet Union removes missiles from Cuba under United Nations supervision in exchange for an American guarantee not to invade Cuba. And, by the way, don't tell anyone about that other part of removing the Jupiter missiles from Turkey. Shh. Cuban Missile Crisis, to be continued. 2003. Queen Califia's magical circle becomes a historic landmark. French artiste Nikki de Saint-Phalle apparently had a really big crush on the original queen of the fictional California island, and as a tribute, built a 9-foot huge sculpture painted with the most colorful of colors. Smack dab into an area where my wife Teresa has shown property recently and actually did a short sale about 8 years ago. FYI. right there in the 760 area code at a 12-acre lot in Escondido in Kit Carson Park's Iris Anke Arboretum. That's considered the last international piece of work in St. Fall's later years. I might be pronouncing his name incorrectly. It might be St. Fail. It's just, if there's one thing I don't do is speak French. I definitely fail at that. Anyway, it starts with a 400-foot-wide wall, which encircles the garden, has the friendly but somewhat intimidating wall of snakes, and a maze that leads, if you're lucky, to a central courtyard. So for my local friends listening, it's just off the 15 at the Via Rancho Parkway exit, at the corner of Bear Valley Parkway and Mary Lane. So, who's with me? 1881, the shootout at the OK Corral. The Earp brothers squared off against the Clanton McGlory gang in quite possibly the most famous gunfights in Old West history. Former Kansas police officer Wyatt Earp and two of his brothers, Morgan and Virgil, moved to Tombstone, Arizona to help keep law and order. Wyatt was a bank security guard, but not like the kind of bank security guards you see today. Oh no. You see, being a guard of anything in the Old West was a very dangerous job, as you can imagine. The Clantons and McGlorys were cattle thief gangsters and liked their style of lawlessness in Arizona. Tensions between the Earps and the Cowboys were stronger than a shot of Jack Daniel's whiskey. Early October 25th, Ike Clanton and Tom McGlory rode into town for supplies and met resistance against the Earps and their friend Doc Holliday. The next morning saw Ike going from saloon to saloon with his six-shooter, pounding whiskey, and getting hammered. Morgan and Virgil Earp encountered him, and Virgil slammed the butt end of his revolver across Ike's head. Around this time, Ike's brother Billy Clanton, Tom's brother Frank McGlory, and Billy Claiborne rode into town to join the Cowboys, but was told by Holliday that Ike and Tom were pistol-whipped by the Earp brothers. And now, ding, ding, it was on. The Earps and Holliday met up at the OK Corral and confronted five members of the McGlory-Clanton gang. The famous gun battle lasted only 30 seconds, most reports stating that Virgil fired the first shot, a direct hit to Billy Clanton's chest, then Holliday fired at Tom McGlory in the chest, Wyatt Earp shot Frank McGlory in the stomach, and Billy and Frank managed to get off a couple shots before collapsing into the ground. When the dust settled, Billy Clanton and the McGlory brothers were dead, and Virgil and Morgan Earp and Doc Holliday were wounded. Ike Clanton and Billy Claiborne ran like coyotes into the wilderness. This famous gunfight was idolized in movies like Tombstone in 1993 and Wyatt Earp in 1994, among many others. And so that, my friends, is going to wrap it up for October 26th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Once again, I'm your host, Joseph DeCristoforo. Check out the website, joesdailyushistorylesson.com. Let me know what you thought about today's episode. For instance, have you ever been to Tombstone to check out reenactment for the shootout at the OK Corral? I've seen it. It is awesome. So yeah, let me know what you think on the comment board. You can also check out some of the multiple choice quizzes while you're on the website. Good luck with that. And be sure to check out tomorrow's episode. We'll wish a happy birthday to Teddy Roosevelt. Plus, I'll talk about the CMOS chip, the Red Sox, and Elvis. So don't miss that. In the meantime, you can catch me on Facebook and Twitter. My Twitter handle is at JDUSHL. So thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks for being great patriotic Americans. See you then.